Be it enacted by the people of the State of New York, represented in Senate and Assembly, and it is hereby enacted by the authority of the same that so much of the same three settlements of Woodstock and Great and Little Shandaken, as is contained in the boundaries hereinafter described, shall be, and hereby erected into a separate township, by the name of the Township of Woodstock. Governing bodies rarely foresee the enduring consequences of their actions, which is why, when the New York legislature passed the preceding act on April 11, 1787, those gathered in New York State's capital that day could be forgiven for not comprehending the course of events they had just set in motion. To be sure, some of those occupying seats in New York's central government at the time, men with names such as Hamilton and Clinton, could be forgiven for their lack of curiosity. No doubt their attention was focused not on what Albany was doing that spring, but rather on the actions of those gathered in Philadelphia in pursuit of a national constitution. Nonetheless, one wonders if men who had the ability to foresee the creation of a new nation conceived in liberty possessed the slightest interest as to where their actions that day might lead. Truth be told, there is little in the record to indicate that they gave it a second thought. After all, Woodstock was just another small town in a remote section of New York's Catskill Mountains. In fact, as the birth of this new town paralleled the birth of a new nation, there were few outward signs that distinguished the town of Woodstock from other towns similarly existing across the state of New York. Save for the fading presence of Indian hunters, a few hand-hewn structures, powerful mountain streams, and an abundance of hemlock forests, there was little to indicate that Woodstock would rise to be a different sort of town, that it would produce and attract a people contrary to the nature of central authority, while, at the same time, quite fond of the freedoms that same central authority had codified into the law of the land, that it would become a town where the physical environment would seemingly merge with those who would inhabit the land, to produce an individuality that would navigate a unique road through the 19th century, while giving birth to an explosion of creativity in the 20th. In these, and in many other ways, the town that was voted into existence on that April day would rise from the remote mountainsides to eclipse the lives of many who served as midwives to its creation. To understand the one constant in the history of Woodstock, visitors and natives alike need only to gaze upward toward the gentle slopes of Overlook Mountain. For it is in that gentle face that they will find the beacon that has summoned the unique individualism and the creative spirit that grace the pages of Woodstock's story. Like many small towns across the Northeast, Woodstock's early history is one of individual struggle in an effort to sustain a simple existence. Prior to the arrival of the first white settlers in the mid-1700s, Indian hunters once traversed the trails along the Sawkill Creek to reach the Overlook hunting grounds that sustained settlements to the south. As both Dutch and English settlers made their way up the Hudson River, the first white settlers arrived to coax crops from Woodstock's rocky soil and craft a living from the forests and mountain streams that surrounded them. By the 1800s, however, the economic focus of settlers shifted to more industrial ends. In 1809, the first glass factory was built in the hamlet of Shady. By the 1830s, tanning, which required a plentiful water supply, and tannic acid, obtained from hemlock trees, found both resources in abundant supply in Woodstock. When both industries struggled to sustain themselves, Woodstockers turned to quarrying bluestone by the mid-1800s in an effort to meet the demands of urban expansion in cities along the eastern seaboard. Later in the century, as Woodstock was discovered as a place where city dwellers could find respite and comfort away from the unhealthy air of an urban summer, Woodstockers learned to craft a living not from the land itself, but from what others saw in the land. A truly transformative chapter in Woodstock's history began in 1902, when, on a spring day, a man by the name of Bolton Brown emerged from the thicket near the summit of Overlook Mountain and first viewed Woodstock and the expanse below. Hired by Ralph Whitehead to seek a physical location that would match Whitehead's vision for an art colony, Brown, upon beholding the vista before him, wrote of that moment, exactly here the story of modern Woodstock really begins. With the founding of Whitehead's Birdcliff Art Colony, the arts had arrived in Woodstock. In addition to Birdcliff, Hervey White would go on to establish the Maverick Art Colony in 1905, while the Art Students League would set up operations in Woodstock a year later. It was the continuation of that same creative spirit that would ultimately transform Woodstock once again. While music had long been a part of the Woodstock art scene, something quite unique began to emerge in the 1960s that would ultimately lend the name of Woodstock to an entire generation. The names, of course, are now legendary. Dylan, Hendrix, the band, to note but a few. And as their music echoed up and down Tinker Street, it also summoned young people and members of the counterculture to begin their own journey to Woodstock. Though the Woodstock Festival wasn't actually held here, the spirit and the energy that it gave birth to were certainly conceived here. In today's post-9/11 world, the face of Overlook Mountain continues to draw newcomers and visitors alike. In doing so, it extends the same promise that it offered both Native Americans and early settlers more than two centuries ago. For within the shadow of Overlook, the individual is always welcome, and new and creative beginnings are always possible. These are the stories of those beginnings, as compiled by the Historical Society of Woodstock. Founded in 1929, the Society, under the initial leadership of its president, Martin Schutz, understood the importance of maintaining a permanent record of Woodstock's history. More than most, Schutz recognized the unique change that had transformed Woodstock from a rural, agricultural town into what we now proclaim as the colony of the arts. At the same time, and ever cognizant that no one era can exist unhinged from the whole, Schutz saw the need for the generations of the present to chronicle the totality of Woodstock's story. That vision manifested itself in a remarkable series of booklets titled The Publications of the Historical Society of Woodstock. Culled from that collection, the stories that follow represent the unique elements of Woodstock's story. Each, on its own, offers an important link in the totality that the founding members of the society sought to represent. From the early pioneering days to the establishment of one of the premier art colonies in the nation, these are the stories of one of America's most famous small towns. A final note. Preserving local history is a job that often rests on the shoulders of volunteers. It falls to dedicated individuals who understand that each story they examine and preserve represents an important building block in the grand foundation that becomes our national story. More often than not, these stories center on individuals, families, and events unique to small towns. It is through their efforts, through the vantage point of local history, that we come to understand that the collective past is but an accumulation of our singular stories, unique in their own telling, but each inexplicably intertwined with our notion of community. Further, we also comprehend how each story shapes and is shaped by the physical environment in which it unfolds, and that the lives our families and ancestors have crafted cannot be disassociated from that landscape we call home. In many respects, through our pursuit of local history, we arrive back where we began, and in doing so, we come to understand that we are not separate from our past, but are an integral part of a combining experience known as community.